Hi, it's Jen Richler. Welcome back to Can We Talk, the podcast of the Jewish Women's Archive, where gender, history, and Jewish culture meet. I am the granddaughter of Holocaust survivors. My mother's parents, Manya and Israel Helfgott, both grew up in Kielce, a Polish town of about 65,000, a third of whom were Jewish. They were teenagers when the war started and survived the ghetto, forced labor, and concentration camps. They both lost nearly all their relatives in the Holocaust. I think about my grandparents every year as Yom HaShoah, Holocaust Remembrance Day, approaches. I think about their stories and what it means that I've inherited those stories as part of the third generation, the grandchildren of survivors. Rachel Sarati is also part of this third generation. She has made a career out of learning and sharing her grandmother's story and helping others do the same with their family stories.
The Holocaust survivor generation has given us such a gift by how they've recorded their stories. They've given us such a gift in learning not just about the war, I would say, but more about like what it means to live a long life. What a wonderful set of lessons for us.
Later in this episode of Can We Talk, Rachel and I talk about how we make meaning from our ancestors' Holocaust stories, how we share them, and how we connect them to what's unfolding in our lives and in the world around us. From the time I was little, I noticed how differently my grandparents shared their Holocaust stories. My grandmother, or Bubby, as I called her, rarely spoke about what she'd been through. But my Zeta wove wartime anecdotes into the fabric of our everyday lives, in the car as he drove me to a music lesson, lingering around the dining room table after dinner on a Friday night. The stories were very detailed. He could even describe the weather conditions on a given day. Sometimes they were surprisingly positive, a time he was given an extra portion of food, for example. As vivid as his stories were, I never wrote them down, and over time they faded into fragments. My mom died in 2000 when I was 22. Just as I was becoming more curious about my family's story, I could no longer go to her to fill in the gaps. So in 2007, when I was visiting my Zeta and my husband Noah suggested recording some of his stories, it seemed like a good idea. We sat at the dining room table in his Montreal apartment. Even though it was just Noah and me visiting, my Zeta was smartly dressed as always, in neatly pressed trousers, a collared shirt, and suspenders. In this clip, he's telling me and Noah about his forced labor in a Polish factory in 1941 and 42. For some reason, he was assigned to work in a factory with non-Jewish Poles, rather than with other Jews.
We get a piece of steel, we put it in the machine, and made the whole thing very precise, very precise. Interested to work. And it happened that they liked my job. It's good.
What were you producing? What were you making?
We produced, this was anti-aircraft.
It was a bullet.
The size from a Coca-Cola bottle. And when I worked on the machine, next to me was a little table, a chair and a table. Always sits a woman there. Every piece what I made, she takes and checked if everything is correct.
How many hours a day did you have to work?
The Jews work 12 hours a day. And this place where I work is 8 hours a day. From 7 o'clock in the morning to 3. And the next shift was 3 o'clock to 11 o'clock midnight. And the third shift was 11 midnight to 7 in the morning.
A little later in the conversation, he described being liberated by American troops while on a death march toward Bergen-Belsen, a German concentration camp.
The liberation was terrible.
Why?
We were on the way. They took all the people to one place, from all the camps to Bergen-Belsen. And we were on the road. And one evening, the night was falling down. And I was in the first row with the assessman standing bottom. And a motorcycle came up from the other side. You want to speak to the leader? So we understood German. He said, the American coming in 10 minutes here. And the night fell down. And the American came. But while the American came, the German was shooting on us. machine gun. The American here, he thought that it's against, yeah, them, but you put the heavy artillery. And I was laying on the road.
It's like they're
right over
your head. But did you know before the Americans came? Like, did you know that the Germans were losing the war?
Oh yes,
everybody.
How did you know?
We hear all these kind of stories. One German came in over to me. He was a prisoner. He said to me, he didn't call me Helf Gott. He said, Gott help. Gott help, he said, for Easter we're going to be home. After the shooting, I was laying in a field, in a bush, in a forest. And I was laying there. I hear the shots out here. I fell asleep. The interesting thing is, I fell asleep. I had a dream. I had a dream that I'm sitting in the house, the whole family, Friday night, we eat supper. So, and I slept, and I said, okay, I wake up, I looked up. It's a daytime, it's bright. I stood up, I walked out, American India.
What did the Americans say? They said, you can go where you want?
The American came over, military police came over to us. First of all, they throw us cigarettes with chocolate.
What language did they speak to you, the Americans?
We couldn't talk to them because we didn't understand them. But the military police came over to everyone. They were in trucks, they jumped down from the truck, they came over to us. They handed us over papers. The paper was in Polish, German, Russian. Well, you choose whatever you can write. You choose Polish. It was Polish written that we are here on the road, there's a war, and we should go into the Bürgermeister. Bürgermeister is like the one who takes care of the mayor, the city mayor. And they send us into German farmers to stay with them.
To stay with German farmers?
Yeah, to eat. They have to give us food. Remember my table when we sitting the first day? We're sitting a few boys, not Jewish, all the goyim. And he put out soup home. You can eat as much as you want the first day. So came out, meat was in it. I couldn't eat the meat.
He must have been starving, but he said he couldn't eat the meat because it wasn't kosher. He said it just didn't feel right to him. In sharp contrast to my Zeta, my Bubby was mostly silent about what she'd endured. There was plenty of opportunity for us to talk. I lived within walking distance of my grandparents and saw them regularly, but she almost never brought it up. I had questions about the blurry tattooed number on her arm from her time in Auschwitz, but I never asked them. No one ever told me not to, but from a young age, I sensed I shouldn't. I also sensed that being a young woman had made her especially vulnerable. In the past few years, I've found myself thinking more about my grandparents, the stories they shared, and the ones they didn't. There are probably a lot of reasons why they're occupying my thoughts more lately. I'm approaching 50 and becoming more aware of how finite our time in the world is. My kids are getting older, and I'm wondering if I should be doing more to pass this legacy on to them. And beyond my own kids, do I have a responsibility to pass on these stories now that the generation of Holocaust survivors is mostly gone? I know October 7th played a role too. I remember how devastated I felt when I heard about Holocaust survivors who were killed or kidnapped on that day. The pull to understand and preserve family stories also drives the work of Rachel Cerati, a writer, educator, curator, and podcaster focused on nonfiction storytelling. When Rachel was in college, she asked her grandmother Hannah to tell her Holocaust story, and she wrote down everything Hannah told her. In 2010, Rachel's senior year, Hannah died, and Rachel and her mother were tasked with sorting through a huge archive of Hannah's mementos, boxes and boxes of letters, photos, and journals dating back to the 1920s. A few years later, Rachel set out to literally retrace her grandmother's Holocaust story, starting in Prague where Hannah was born and following her trajectory through Central Europe, Scandinavia, and eventually to America. Rachel lived in every country Hannah had lived in and tracked down people Hannah had mentioned in her letters and journals, including people who had saved her and their descendants. She even lived for a month with the granddaughter of a Danish woman who had taken Hannah in through a program that rescued Jewish children from Czechoslovakia and trained them in agriculture before sending them to Palestine. In 2019, Rachel partnered with the Shoah Foundation to tell the story of her journey in a podcast called We Share the Same Sky, and later published a memoir by the same name. Rachel has also worked with survivor testimonies from the Rwandan genocide and other atrocities.
I've always been really fascinated by memory. Like, that's kind of the field that's my lane, is working with memory. And I love working with memory because it's so fallible, and it changes with time. So your facts, like, I'm not a historian. I know history. I'm not a historian. I'm not hyper-fixated on what the facts were. When we talk about, you know, wanting to pass down the story, for me, that's really important, because what it does is it reminds us that, like, people who are going through war today, or people that we read about in the media, that, like, nobody is just that one story that we're hearing.
It was interesting to me to hear about and read about the ways that you took this on in the way that you did. I grew up with a lot of stories, and I think, as I got older, I think I felt some responsibility to carry those stories. But I have not taken that on in the way, clearly, that you have. Do you think that all descendants in some way are responsible for being the keepers of their family stories?
I think that there are times in one's life when family history serves as a source of strength, as a source of direction, as a source of clarity, particularly when the world feels as confusing and scary and on edge as it does right now. I think the past can be an anchor to the present in a way that certainly is important. And I really believe that family history is a bridge builder. Like, I believe that taking the time to spend time with my grandmother's story, and you don't need to spend as much time as I did, but to spend time, it means that I have a better ability to relate to other people who've spent time in their family history. So when I go to Rwanda and work there, and I can speak with my peers who may have survived the Rwandan genocide, I have some sense of myself that grounds me in a way that allows me to listen better to mm-hmm. them, that allows me to have some perspective that gives me some sort of bridge of connection, even though we're from completely different parts of the world and languages and backgrounds. And so I think family history can serve as a tool in so many different ways in our life. Whether or not it's the responsibility of all of us to carry everything, I think that's too much. But I think there's times in our life where we are called on to remember, and we should hear the call and take it and, you know, interpret that for ourselves in the way that we need it.
You said something about how, like, your grandmother's stories have provided a lens through which you see the world and understand your own life. Can you say a little bit more about that?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, I knew my grandmother's story from a young child, but it really wasn't until I started more deeply digging in, and by that I mean, like, when she and I sat down to start talking, that, you know, the world around me just started to be shaped by the past. You know, as politics have shifted, what I've learned about, you know, the period of life in which she grew up in. So she grew up in Prague, which, you know, Czechoslovakia was formed in 1918 at the end of World War One, and was this, like, you know, art-centric, you know, liberal-minded, democratic country. And she would tell me that, like, you know, she would hear her parents talking throughout the 1930s when she was a young child that, like, it can never happen here. It can never happen here, talking about the anti-Semitism in neighboring Germany. You know, that shaped me throughout the 2010s when I started to more deeply work with her story and began teaching it in classrooms and developing, you know, the podcast, the book, the curriculums. Like, you know, those words echoed, you know, throughout my ears and my mind. So there's that end of it. There's, like, the politics end of it. But also in my own life, you know, it was 7 years into working on her story that I was widowed young. I was 27 when my first husband passed away, and he was Polish, and he and I had met at Hebrew University as college students in Jerusalem. And he was from a Polish Catholic family and deeply interested in Jewish history. And so, you know, we were best friends for a long time and romantically got involved when I was relocating to Europe to work on my grandmother's story. So it was very much because of her that he and I got together. And being a part of his family, being that they came from such a different history in Europe, which was very present for them because they still lived there, you know, was really a really important part of how I related to my grandmother's story. But I would say my most dramatic example of all this was when he passed away when I was 27, and he died from an unexpected heart attack at the age of 28, like a total statistical anomaly 2 weeks before our first wedding anniversary. And when he passed, and I talk about this in the book and in the podcast, you know, I was sitting at, you know, his bedside in the hospital, and I couldn't stop thinking about my grandmother because I just felt like this deep sense of fraud that I had been working with her story for so many years, and I never really talked about grief, and I never really thought about grief. And that was really a very stark moment for me to recognize that I was very limited on what I could understand about her story. And I think it dissolved a lot of the arrogance a lot of us 20-somethings have. And that was kind of my entrance into a much more humble version of adult life, where I recognized that I could spend the rest of my life, which I probably will, immersed in her story, and I still would be limited on what she actually experienced and what she felt, and that had to be okay, and that had to be more than okay, that had to be good. You know, this was not the goal, was to fully understand. The goal was to be connected in the way that I needed to in that moment. And I would spend the next many years actually like retracing my own footsteps in retracing her footsteps, and rereading her diaries again and going back through her whole archive again and seeing her story so differently. Like, the spaces of silence were much louder for me. And there were certain passages that I had kind of glossed over before that stood out as the most important words on the page. And it was all these like subtle moments of grief, and like the one line in a letter where she mentions that, you know, she didn't tell her story to the guy on the train because she thought he would think it's weird that she had no family. And I started to recognize that, like, I was doing some of those things. Like, I was intentionally curating my own experience as a young widow because it just opened up too many questions sometimes. Mm. And so she ended up, my grandmother's story really ended up becoming like a guidebook for me of how to move through grief, and still is. And now I said ever before I got pregnant, but now certainly that I have a child, that once this chapter opened up to me, I was going to have to like go back through everything again and find all the passages I missed, because now I could understand a child. But now it's like, now I have to think about her parents differently. Like, what does it mean to send your child away? And I tear up thinking about that now, and I didn't used to.
100% that now when I hear stories, any kind of story that involves a child in the Holocaust in any way, or separation of children and parents, that hits in such a different way as a parent.
Yeah, you get cracked open as you grow up, you know?
Absolutely. How do you think about passing your grandmother's story on to your son, and I guess more generally about passing these stories on to the next generation?
You know, it started when I got pregnant. I immediately felt a confrontation with this history. no one will be surprised to know that I have like stacks of books about the Holocaust and genocide because it's been my professional life. I also have, you know, lots of memoirs sent to me by other people about their own family history. And I had to box them all up and put them away. I actually just felt this like deep, overwhelming feeling that I just did not want to be surrounded by these stories while pregnant. And I started seeking out very different stories. And I actually was confronted during my pregnancy with a couple opportunities to go to Europe to do some memory trips, you know, to go to places of, you know, historical significance for the Holocaust. And I turned them down after some like really like kind of anxious deliberation. I just felt a deep discomfort with the idea of bringing this like, you know, perfect unborn child into that type of heaviness. You know, and it wasn't that I was worried about like epigenetics or any type of like biological transference. It was more that I was very aware that no matter what I do in my life now, I'm handing my child a story. And if I were to start his life with the story of, you know, I brought you to Auschwitz before you were born, there was just something that felt like that's not supposed to be. Like, that's not why my grandmother survived, so I could be bombarded by this history all the time. You know, this is a slice of who he is.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I think it's something that I will be navigating forever, which I think I should, right? I don't think these questions about memory and family history are to be answered once and just assumed thereafter. I do think that they are meant to be shifting and shaping on a daily basis, right? Like when something happens in the news that relates to something about my family history, I'm going to feel it more. And then on other days, I don't think about it. And that's the way I think it should be. But yeah, I mean, he's going to grow up in a really different identity, in a really different place. And I want him to know this part of the past, but it has to be okay if it's not his identity. Also, like, shouldn't our goal be to move to a place where our family histories are peaceful? So that's the hope, right?
My kids are teenagers. And certainly I have not spent as much time as I imagine you will telling them stories about my grandparents. And so there's some guilt on my part about like that I haven't done a good enough job of making them feel that personal connection to the Holocaust and to their great-grandparents' stories?
No, I don't think you should feel guilty. I mean, I understand it totally and completely. Like, don't get me wrong. I absolutely understand where that's coming from. But, you know, none of our grandparents, you know, speaking from the third generation perspective, nobody wished upon us that we would have to carry the history of genocide. Hmm. With that being said, I think it's important to know history, but it's also important to have the space to learn other people's histories, to be able to carry the weight of, you know, the evils in the world today, which there are plenty of happening, you know, and we only have so much bandwidth. So I think it's a real, like, it's something to be navigated. I deeply believe that we should know where we come from. But I also believe that family history is like breadcrumbs. You know, as, you know, it's so weird, like now thinking about myself is like, oh my God, I'll be in like an ancestor one day, right? I've always mm-hmm. been on the young, like, I can't be an ancestor. I only have ancestors. But, you know, very much the sandwich generation right now. And to think that like my job as a parent is to leave the story behind, to leave it there, and for them to have access to it, and to trust that if they need it, they'll know where to find it.
Hmm.
And that's the best I can do. And I really draw that from my grandmother. And, you know, she recorded her testimony in the Shoah Foundation archives, which is where the audio is pulled from for the podcast for We Share the Same Sky. And they ask her at the end of that interview, you know, and I'm going to paraphrase here, but they ask her, you know, why do you leave your story behind, which is what they ask all survivors. And she says a version of like, you know, I look at these pictures that I have and I know who these people are. And I think about the fact that when I'm gone, no one will know who these people in the photographs are. So I'm going to leave it behind. And if they care, it's here. And if they don't, I won't know. And I kind of, she was a blunt woman.
You were just talking about personal loss and how that changes the way you relate to your grandmother's story. What about, you know, the kind of tragedies that happen on a much larger scale? Mm-hmm. I'm especially interested to hear you talk about how the events of October 7th affected the way that you related to your grandmother's story and the need to share that story.
Still ongoing, how I, you know, how I relate to it. In 2023, I partnered with the Florida Holocaust Museum in St. Petersburg, Florida, to turn this into a museum exhibition, which was a total dream, but it was a task. And I was coming off of being very burnt out. I got a little sick from burnout that I had to tend to. And when the exhibition was opening in September of 2023, I was of the mindset that, like, okay, I've done it. You know, I'm time to maybe take my step out of the world of Holocaust storytelling and genocide storytelling. And, you know, I'll always stay in it a little bit, but maybe see what's the next, you know, decade plus long thing I'm going to get myself immersed into. And then 1 week later, it was October 7th, exactly to the day. And I just kind of shut down after that. And I decided to just take some time and sit with all of this and ask myself the question that you just asked me. And I don't think I have an answer for it yet. You know, I was going back and forth of, like, is this a field that, is this more important now than ever? And if the answer is yes, then how? And one of the things that has always drawn me to storytelling and, you know, why I've chosen that as the space to, like, center my career is that I do believe that, like, what we have a responsibility to is to draw from different stories of history at different times. And I've seen stories of the Holocaust provide incredible strength to people, provide community, provide purpose, provide direction. And I've also seen stories distorted and used to create fear and harm. And I, you know, felt like I had this story of, like, how good humans can be when everything is going wrong. And so, you know, I've stuck with it, and I don't think it's just what's happening in the Middle East. It's what's happening all around the world that, you know, needs to be, you know, trying to find the balance of how do we lean on the past. What I will say is that the space that I have felt most clarity in my relationship to the current, you know, what's happening to humans as a result of politics is that when I'm sitting in conversation with other children and grandchildren of the Holocaust, as well as descendants of other mass atrocities from throughout the 20th and 21st centuries, which I feel lucky that that community exists around me. And when we get to sit there and talk and wrestle with our own emotions, but together in community, that's when I feel like I'm using the stories to their greatest power, is that when we're sitting and we're sharing and we're asking ourselves and we're doing the very Jewish thing and questioning ourselves and saying, you know, what stories do we need right now? Why? What is this providing me with? Is this giving me a source of strength, or is this making me more scared to be Jewish? Like, what way am I interpreting my own past and the role of that in the present?
I'd like to think I'm not alone in these feelings among kind of the third generation of, like, what is this story that I have inherited and these memories that I've inherited, and how do I understand them, and how do I make meaning from them? And just things that maybe I've sort of put off to the side for a long time or just didn't want to pay that much attention to are starting to feel more pressing for some reason. And so I guess my question to you is, do you have any advice about that that you could offer?
So a few things. One, whenever you come to the family story and whenever you start asking those questions, that's the right time. Like earlier, I called it breadcrumbs. Like I think that your like family history is there when you need it. And I encourage people to connect with it maybe sooner than that, because I think that that helps teach you what to ask, right? Once you start getting a little bit of information, questions start to form. It's how I've ended up doing this for all these years, is that I keep having new questions come, and it had to begin with the simple question to my grandmother of what happened. So if you're just coming to family history now and just starting, even if just listening to this episode, you're like, huh, I wonder what, whatever that is for you. Great. Now is the best time, right? There's no guilt to be felt that it didn't happen sooner. And then as you start to dig into it, like just one step at a time, you know, I work with a lot of people who are working on books about their family history or trying to compile an archive for their next generation. And when you start to look at it in full, it can be so overwhelming, because we're talking about many ancestors and full life stories and the politics that surrounded them. And like, it's so much life. And so if you spend, you know, a few hours every few weeks doing some research online or digitizing an archive or printing your own photographs and handwriting your own captions so your next generation has a physical, that's a soapbox of mine, is print your pictures and handwrite captions on them. I think I always say if my grandmother's archive had been in the computer, I never would have gotten into it. But just asking your family members for their stories, for their memories, pull out a family photograph or a very specific experience that you can remember and just ask them to describe that. And like maybe take your phone and record it, you know, them talking, and just get a 5-minute anecdote and start to collect those and see what goes from there. So that's kind of my starter kit of advice, is just like wherever you're at with it, you're in the place you should be. And if you want to go a little bit deeper, just start with the simple questions first, and you'll be amazed by how much is in those answers.
That was Rachel Cerotti, storyteller and creator of the podcast We Share the Same Sky. After the war, my bubby ended up in Malmo, Sweden. The government of Sweden was rescuing non-Jewish women from Auschwitz, and my grandmother was added to the list to fill a quota. In the meantime, as we heard in the recording at the beginning of the episode, my Zeta was liberated in Germany. He bumped into my bubby's brother Leon, who he'd known growing up, and asked after my bubby. When he found out she was in Sweden, he started writing to her, and eventually took a rowboat to Sweden and entered the country illegally to be with her. They married in Malmo in 1948 and had a daughter, my mother Ruth, in 1950. When my mother was just 5 months old, they boarded a ship to Canada, where they'd learned my bubby had a distant cousin. They had a son, my uncle Simon, in 1953 and lived the rest of their lives in Montreal. My bubby Manya died in 2004, a week before my wedding. My Zeta died in 2012, a few weeks after my daughter was born. Her name is Maya Ruth, in memory of my bubby and my mother. On Yom HaShoah, we honor the memory of those killed in the Holocaust, whose lives and stories were cut short. Thank you for listening to Can We Talk? Our team includes Nahani Rouse and Judith Rosenbaum. Our theme music is by Girls in Trouble. You can find Can We Talk at jwa.org/canwetalk or on your favorite podcast app. On our website, you can also see photos of my grandparents and of Rachel and her grandmother. You can find Rachel Cerotti's podcast at wesharethesamesky.com/podcast. I'm Jen Richler. Until next time.